This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, before we get to the Bears, let's go FIU La Tech. Mike Somich, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. Week zero starting tomorrow. Can't wait for football to get here. This is Sharp Money. It's VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. So let's discuss a game where we're sitting right now, La Tech hosting FIU, 12.5. That total's 58. Again, last year, you look to last year, 42-34 winner for FIU. Well over 800 yards of offense. Yes, it did go to overtime, but these are two quarterbacks that can legit sling it. You've got Grayson James, 321 yards, three touchdowns last year against La Tech. And here comes Hank Bachmeier. You know the name? Of course you do. Boise State, he's a grown man. He's 24 years old. He's going to sling it for La Tech. Push the ball, move it. These are two teams that want to go, go, go. Where did this open, big guy?
I believe it was 7.5 was the original number.
Okay. Now, you do have a play here. Where you at?
Well, no. That's what I need you guys for. I don't have a play here. I am debating a couple of different things here. Louisiana, first of all, these two teams matched up a year ago. There was 800 yards of total offense. Like, last year they wanted to get out and run. And this year, you're bringing a better quarterback for Louisiana Tech. And on the other side, you have an FIU team that doesn't even resemble what they were a year ago. Absolutely gutted in the portal. 55 new players on the Panthers roster heading into this season. They lost RB1 Lexington Joseph, sounds like an adult film star, to an ACL in the offseason. They lost their top receiver and their top tight end. They lost three offensive linemen in the transfer portal, and they're 5-16 all-time in road openers. This defense a year ago was not very good either, allowing 37.3 points per game, which was 129th in the nation. So I want to fade FIU because Bachmeier coming in for Louisiana Tech, I think their offense is going to be really good. A year ago, they were 62nd in the country, 29 points per game. I think they're a really interesting team to bet here. I think they have a lot of weapons coming back. I want to bet Tech. The question is, am I laying 11.5 in the game, or something I like to do, shorten up that big favorite through that key number, because 11.5 through the key number of 12, I can now get it down in the first half to 6.5. And that's where I'm leaning, thinking of doing.
Yeah, this is a tough game to bet right now. You mentioned that this one opened at 7.5 about 3 months ago, right? So you had a ton of time that it was available. It got bet up right away. It's been sitting in that 9.5, 10, 10.5, 11 range. It was 11.5 yesterday. We're showing 12.5 on the board now. On top of what Dustin said about Florida National, they were also the 121st ranked offense last year, losing all of those pieces, right? So they weren't good, and then they got gutted, right? This is not a great spot to be if you're FIU in here. The problem for me is it's a week zero conference game. I'm not really looking to lay 12.5 points in a week zero conference game. If I wanted this, I would have wanted to bet it earlier. If I'd bet it now, I agree with the first half look if you're laying less than a touchdown. I'd much rather play first half and say, okay, La Tech's going to come out, jump on them, and be able to try and cover that first half by a touchdown or more versus the essentially two touchdowns you need to win by here. 13 obviously possible, but most likely you're covering if it's 14 to be able to cover the full game. And that just screams back door to me. It's just a situation where it's an in-conference game, so the teams actually know each other. Went to overtime last year. Yes, that game was in FIU, not at La Tech. So you have the home switch there as well. But all those different things make me, look, if I didn't get La Tech in sub 10, I'm not betting them laying over 10. And so for me, it's first half or pass here. I'm probably going to end up passing this game because it's a week zero conference game.
Okay, let's get off it. Let's go to the Bears because Somich said something during the break that was interesting. Simply said, I hate the Bears this year. Let's discuss them. 7.5 is the win total in a bad division. No offense to my Lions. 3-14 last year. Remember, they started 2-1. They lost 13 of 14 down the stretch. Did they have luck? Nope. 1-6 in games decided by 7 points or less. Now, they do have the 9th easiest strength of schedule. Of course, they play 4 games against the NFC South. That'll help the Bears. Justin Fields, better protection, more experience. The mission statement was very clear last year. Tear it down, cap space, build towards this year. And that's what they've done. Obviously, the linebackers in Edmonds, Ngakoue, and Walker, they traded last year for Chase Claypool to help the offense. I think it was the fifth
youngest roster last year, more experience. Eberflus is going to be better in year two. They were competitive. It was a team that was competitive. Wild defeats along the way. Again, three wins, a minus 137 point differential. You look to the projected wins. They should have been right around 5, 5.2. So no luck went their way last year either. 3-8 if you want to go over the 7.5. Admittedly, Samich is a big jump. You are down on the Bears this year.
Yeah, I don't love the Bears. I don't love the no luck thing either. Look, if it weren't for a monsoon, they would have lost week one. Okay, they were not going to beat the 49ers if that was a normal weathered game too. So got to give them that win as well, even though it doesn't count on the numbers that you're throwing at us. I hate the secondary. That's my biggest problem. Okay, you got Eddie Jackson as a safety. There's nothing else in this secondary, and you're in a division where pretty much everybody can throw the football. Minnesota can sling it. Detroit can sling it. I think Jordan Love's going to be pretty good. Dustin and I could argue about this for the third week in a row, but I think he's going to be pretty good. I think the Packers can sling it. That is a problem for this Bears team. And then, look, it starts and ends with the quarterback here. Justin Fields was the 31st of 34 rated quarterbacks at the position throwing the football last year. He needs to improve throwing the football. I understand he can run all over the place. That's great. I love it. You can't win in the NFL if you don't throw the football from the quarterback position.
DJ Moore is going to help. Legit wide receiver one. Let's look at his rush yards as well. He's not going to run it as much as he did last year. I believe Fields got close to 1150, 1200 yards on the ground, something like that. Again, a better roster this year. Okay, you want to remove the luck. I appreciate that. 3-14 last year, big guy, 7.5 for the Bears this year.
Yeah, it's hard to judge Justin Fields as a passer a year ago, though, I think, because I think he probably had the worst weapons in the league to throw to, even behind Daniel Jones. And if we're going to say that Daniel Jones, which I've said personally, is going to get better because he has better weapons this year, we have to do the same for Justin Fields. He actually has NFL receivers to throw to, not Velus Jones Jr. Like, he's got a trio of Mooney, Claypool, and Moore that if those guys play to their potential, they're pretty dangerous and a solid tight end in Cole Kmet. I think the offense is going to be good. I have questions about the defense, but you know, you bring in a guy like Ngakoue off the edge, you sign up two really athletic sideline-to-sideline linebackers. I think they can be a solid team. Maybe it's a lot to add in one offseason, but I like them better than Green Bay. I still am starting to think that we're still sleeping on the Vikings in this division. The Vikings are the class. But I would say Chicago would be my next team behind Minnesota to make a run in this division.
I'll ask Samich this way. If you don't believe in bad luck or a lack of luck for the Bears, do you expect some variance to flip as far as Minnesota's concerned? Because they certainly felt like at 13 wins, a lucky team last year.
Yeah, I mean, of course they were lucky with 13 wins. It was 11-0 in one score games. That is wild to be have that heavy of a win percentage in those one score games. The number reflects that, though. Look, their Pythagorean wins last year was 7.9, so about 8 wins for the Vikings in the Pythagorean win. They're sitting at 8.5 on the number. They are basically being assumed as a 9-8, 8-9 team last year, and that's kind of what they were. I think they're the most known team in this division. If you go from like looking at it from a known or unknown quantity of what you're going to get, this Vikings team has the most known quantity of everybody. You know what Kirk Cousins is. You've got weapons on the outside. I like adding the addition of Addison out there with Justin Jefferson. The defense isn't going to be very good, but let's face it, none of these defenses are very good. Really, the Packers is the only one that may be top half of the NFL here in this division. So you really got to expect the offenses are going to light the board up. This is my favorite division to bet overs in this year, which seems wild because how often do you say the NFC North is an over division, but it feels like there's going to be a lot of interdivisional games that go over the total this year.
You are taking a gamble. Like, for example, Sam Howell has been part of the conversation as far as what to expect. Jordan Love has been part of the conversation as to what to expect. And I appreciate Samich's take, and I appreciate the big guy's take, but you are taking a risk if you think you have any clue about those two quarterbacks. As a matter of fact, you could put Kenny Pickett in the mix and say he's more of a known quantity at this point because you actually got to see him a little bit last year. The Packers, let's transition quickly. The Packers, 8-9 last year. I think to your point, I will say, I think there's a sense of just kind of breathe a little bit in that locker room because moving on, a sigh of relief, moving on from the pain in the ass that is Aaron Rodgers, almost holding the organization hostage. 7.5, you got to get to 8 if you want to go over it. And I assume your love for Love would lead you that way, Samich.
Yeah, I'm going over here. And if you look at the numbers last year, Aaron Rodgers was the 17th best quarterback in the NFL. So it's not like you are having to replace an MVP. I realize you are literally replacing an MVP, but his numbers last year were 17th in the NFL. So if you look at it from that perspective, if Love can step in and be middle of the road, you're going to get the same or possibly a little bit better Packers team because the defense should be improved this year over last year. They went over this total last year where they ranked the PFF ranked 17th best quarterback. If Love is anywhere in that area, they're going to go over it this year. I think that they have the weapons on the outside are going to be better this year in both Dobbs and Watson. Again, I think the defense should be a little bit better. Little concerns around the defensive coordinator and the fact that he likes to run prevent early in the fourth quarter when you're ahead, so some lead concerns there. But I do think you're going to have a better defensive team here. You've got a division where you can throw the football. And honestly, if I was on this Packers team last year, I would have been so furious and so frustrated playing with Aaron Rodgers, someone who was not accurate with the football, was missing throws over the middle, wasn't himself, and you knew his head wasn't in the game. That affects the locker room. That affects the team. I think this is going to be a rejuvenated Packers team here with Aaron Rodgers out of the building.
Issues with the defensive coordinator, Joe Barry is a buster. The fact that he's back for year three is fascinating. 27th in EPA allowed, 20th. And defensive DVOA Football Outsiders, they were terrible last year, underperformed. I will say, as far as the run game is concerned, I think they're going to lean on it. And they were very good. 6-1 straight up in ATS when they went for 115-plus on the ground. They got the 1-2 punch. I'm not a Dylan guy like most, but Aaron Jones is a stud, big guy.
It's a 6 or 7 win team for me. I don't like the way the schedule plays out for them. They have a couple runs in the schedule where this thing could get away from them post-bye.
That is going to piss off Mike Sonic. You guys going to be okay during the break? Because
he just tries to piss whoever's off in the studio. Now I get it. Now I know the shtick.
Yeah, it's not shtick with them all.
I'm just being myself.
We're back with the Ravens and Steelers next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, check out the betting splits, money and bets for every game, updated every 10 minutes straight from DraftKings. Today's games and future events as well, only at VSiN.com. It's our most popular tool by far. People are hungry and thirsty for the splits. You will be too. I don't know how you get through a football season without our betting splits. Go ahead and give it a try. You'll see. VSiN.com. Check out the betting splits. We're back. Mike Somich sitting in today. Great to see our friend and our contemporary here at VSiN as he starts up a new show on Saturdays and Sundays with Matt Brown. We'll get more into that in just a little bit. The big guy, double dipping today, hosting Best Bets before Sharp Money, did a great job. I'm Patrick Maher. Again, this is Sharp Money. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. As an announcement yesterday, boys, just wanted to bring this up quickly. Steven Strasburg shut it down. Now, you kind of have to put this in a vacuum because it all worked out for the Nats and Strasburg. But if you think about it, has there been a team that's unveiled two prospects like Harper and Strasburg that had more hype coming into, you know, their careers respectively? I don't think there has. Now, Strasburg was great in the year that the Nats won a championship, but really he's known for, I think his number eventually gets retired there in DC because he was just such a force and a cult of personality as far as perception. But he went to the IL 15 times and he's got severe nerve damage. So he's been shut down. I want to bring this up because as a contrast, think about it this way. There's a pitcher that is 5 years older than Steven Strasburg. He's already pitched 115 innings this year. He's got three Cy's. His first Cy Young was in 2011. His last Cy Young was last year. Again, I mention he's 5 years older than Strasburg, who just shut it down for his career. 11 years this pitcher has thrown for 200-plus innings. This is trivia for you boys. Last year, 8 pitchers in total in all of Major League Baseball threw for the benchmark when we were growing up, which used to be 200 innings pitched plus for a starter. Do you know the answer, big guy?
I'm blank.
Kate Upton's husband.
Justin Verlander is correct. Think about it. I know it's kind of a wacky bit that I'm doing here, but Strasburg, who is legendary in DC, think about the appreciation we should have for constant Tommy Johns and everything that has happened. This is 18 seasons deep for Verlander. He's 40 and he's got a 3.3 ERA or even lower at this point. That's remarkable.
I would be remiss not to mention Kerry Wood and Mark Pryor as a Cubs fan for the highest of highs and the just ultimate flame out inside of two seasons. The two of them, I remember watching that Florida series and watching the Bartman game and being like, it's fine. We'll get back here. We're going to be dominant for the next 5 years. Never even sniffed it again.
That is, those two are great examples of the warning. And I understand that there's like pitching coaches. Now, your brother's a pitching coach, big guy. They talk about the inverted W that Strasburg threw with, which eventually those that kind of watch pitchers and their delivery said his career is going to end early. And it certainly has.
I mean, he's a cautionary tale. So, I mean, there's people on this network all the time, on every network, that will complain about, I remember back in my day, pitchers used to go deep into games. Well, if you don't bring them along properly, they're never going to get to that point. And once you kind of ruin them and taint them early on and abuse their arms, you're left with a product that's never going to reach its potential. And very early on, Steven Strasburg was relied to do things because he was a college pitcher coming out of San Diego State. He was there to save the franchise. His first start with the Nationals was like the first real organic moment that franchise had since moving to D.C. It kind of was the beginning of the new build. Like, we were getting rid of all the past expos, and now it was kind of a standalone franchise. So it was really important for him to get out there and throw. And I think he's the example we can use now of saying don't expect too much too early. We got a guy in the AL in Shane McClanahan who's been lights out for three quarters of the past two seasons, but his arm keeps falling apart at the end. Baseball people need to decide on how to operate properly for the benefit of that young man and his career. We have too many pitchers who are always getting hurt, and it's not a toughness thing. You can't pitch through tears. You can't pitch through your arm falling off. Like, these guys need to understand what their limitations are, and franchises need to protect them from themselves. That's why these guys go 5-6 innings now, because we want them to have 20-year careers, not fizzle out after 6 or 7.
Were you just randomly waiting for me to bring up pitchers' injuries today so you could go off? Because that was brilliant, but what the hell? Where'd that come from?
I just, like, we're going to look back on Steven Strasburg's career, and at some point we're going to be old men and we're going to say, you know, what could have been, and like act like it was somehow his fault, and none of it's his fault. It's actually the society he's in baseball circles. And I just hear the people, there's people all the time on TV and radio that I hear all the time, these guys don't go deep enough into games. Yeah, because they're trying to survive, man.
You also weren't throwing 100 40 years ago when you were going deep into these games. You didn't have as aggressive curveballs and sliders.
Dominant.
And it was very different, the style of pitching, right, versus what you're seeing today from a lot of these starters who are getting injured and who are throwing big-time innings in Little League and then throwing big-time innings in high school and then throw big-time innings in college and then come to the majors with poor mechanics and they're throwing big-time innings in the majors and trying to throw 100. Yeah, stuff happens. It's going to happen.
Why wouldn't you launch into a pro Verlander take based on the anomalous nature of what he's done over 18 seasons in a modern day game?
Because the guys like Verlander are so remarkable. There are so few of them. Not anyone can do that or be that, especially at this age. My point is we have to stop treating all the other guys like they can be this rare superstar. All these other guys are other guys for a reason. Like, the finding the next Justin Verlander, they may never be another one who's able to be that dominant, throw that hard, and throw that many innings consistently. You're more likely to find these Steven Strasburgs, and it's your job as a franchise to figure out how to manage them and how to use them properly to succeed.
I'm not sure if I'm sorry or glad I asked.
I'm like depressed over Steven Strasburg's career. Imagine they don't win the title in 19. Then
but it validates everything. Yeah. That's the point. They've dumped everybody from that team, but the validation is there. And that becomes the conversation about constantly looking to the future as far as franchises or actually accomplishing what you set out to do, which is win a World Series. They're rebuilding now, but they got the championship. That's all that matters. No.
Yeah. But you look back at his stats, and there's only two seasons where he threw over 200 innings. Like, this guy had some of the most pure dominant stuff we have ever seen. Him and Bryce Harper were supposed to make the Nationals a monster for 15 years. Now we have neither of them on the team. The team stinks. He's retiring. And I don't know. I don't know why I'm sad about it. You don't know how you're going to feel about something until it happens. his career is making me sad.
Where do you have Bartolo Colon and CeCe Sabathia on this list? Two guys who had very high highs but pitched forever. They weren't great toward the end. What do we make of their careers?
Bartolo only threw fastballs at the end, too. I think longevity does matter. I think there's a lot of guys that we don't appreciate. Like, I mean, the same respect, like, should we appreciate Julio Franco more? Like there's a lot. Longevity does matter, but, like, dominance is what the key is. Bartolo,
did you go to sleep?
Dominant.
Yeah.
Did you go to sleep last night legitimately, like, I hope Patrick brings up Strasburg. I hope brings up Strasburg.
I went to bed fine, and then I woke up, and I was going to text you guys. I was going to be like, did one of you break into my house and fart in my mouth during the sleep? Because I can't get this taste out of my mouth all morning.
Why are we getting blamed for this?
Someone had to do it. I don't have that many friends.
I'm on a plane. In Los Angeles. He's in Los Angeles.
You could have gotten here from L.A., done it, and driven back in the time.
Let's see how quickly we could do the traverse, because it's hard to explain for horse racing non-fans or people that don't follow the sport. The Breeders' Cup is a global event, and kind of our championship in the States would be, you know, Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont, the Triple Crown Series. The fourth major would be the Traverse at Saratoga, correct, Mike Somich? And the Kentucky Derby winner, Mage, the Preakness winner, National Treasure, and the Belmont winner, Arcangelo, are all running at Saratoga and the Traverse tomorrow, and this is a big deal.
It's a huge deal. Yeah, we've got all three of the Triple Crown Jewel winners competing at the Travers. It's called the Midsummer Derby. It's the fourth biggest horse race for three-year-olds in the country. And it's only happened four times in the history of this race. It'll be the 140-something running of the Travers. Only four times have we had all three winners. And on top of that, Forte, also going to be in the race, the number one post. He was the favorite in the Kentucky Derby before that late scratch there. Probably the best three-year-old in the country right now, too. So you've got Forte, plus your winner of the Kentucky Derby, plus your winner of the Preakness, plus your winner of the Belmont, all banging heads. And because of it, you can get a decent price on any of them. Forte, your morning line favorite at 7-5. Arcangelo, the second choice, 5-2. You've got Mage, who's 4-1, your third choice. And then you've got National Treasure, the Preakness winner, at 8-1. You're never getting these type of prices on these horses when they're facing anyone but these specific horses. So it sets up beautifully as a betting race.
Who is Mike Somich playing in the Traverse for those that are going to get involved tomorrow?
I like Forte the most. 7-5, don't love the price, but I do think Forte is the best horse. I think Mage is the second best horse, so I'll have a cold 1-4 exacta. I think if you're able to upset the apple cart here, it's a horse going gate to wire. It's Bill Mott trainees, Scotland, 12-1 on the morning line, the 7 horse.
Big guy, just one more question about Steven Strasburg. No, I'm just playing. Seriously, I haven't seen you that mad in a long time. Are you good? Do you want to, like, is there anything else you want to add?
Do you need a hot dog?
Do you know who his college coach was?
Yeah, Tony Gwynn.
It's crazy.
R.I.P. Tony Gwynn.
Nice pull.
Yeah, Strasburg was a stud coming in. So was Harper. Harper just recently said he wished he played his whole career in Philly. Ouch, D.C. Taking one. When we come back, Pittsburgh Steelers are on deck.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show host and guests. You'll get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. You can sort by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, ROI, and see which VSiN experts have the hot hand for VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, 24/7 video access. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up today for only $19 for your first month. It's VSiN.com/subscribe. Okay, we welcome you back. Mike Somich, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. This is Sharp Money. And as I look at the board, we're going to open week 0 in Dublin with Navy and Notre Dame. Just a note, Notre Dame just got hit to 21 at DraftKings, so favored by 21 over the Midshipmen tomorrow. With that, we welcome in Malik Zaire, of course, the former Notre Dame standout quarterback. You can check out Malik's podcast, Lucky Lefty Podcast, and find him on Twitter, at MalikZaire8. We say hi to Malik.
That's right.
Are you excited? That's right. Hi, Malik. Are you excited for week 0 and excited for Notre Dame in Dublin?
You know, it's always good when Notre Dame can kick off week 0 of college football the right way. You know, we're the only team that can bring that many Irish people over to Ireland and make it a bonanza that won't be forgotten. So another classic we're going to give the world, and excited for Notre Dame to roll out there. I mean, for Vegas not to give us any more wins than last year, and we got one of the number one transfer quarterbacks, I find it real interesting. I think Vegas got something out there against us, but we're looking to turn things around, starting off with the Navy Bishop.
Hey, Malik, Mike here. Great to talk to you here. I have a question about the new rules that we've seen implemented so far this year in the college football landscape. There's not going to be any automatic timeouts in the game after first downs. As a quarterback, a former quarterback, how would that adjust your strategy on the offensive side of the ball and how fast you're trying to get your team up to the line after a first down?
Yeah, you definitely want to play with some pace. Not having the timeout after the first down, essentially, you really get a chance to really get a flow of the game. And I think for a lot of quarterback, especially a veteran quarterbacks out there, they can work faster with pace. The whole looking at the sideline thing and checking back, I think they'll get a rid of that a little bit, just because moving fast, you want to be able to be within that play clock and be a little more simple on offense. Defensively, it works out great, especially for the two-minute drill in the game. You see how it definitely caused a lot of commotion on the professional level. But for college, it'll definitely change the dynamic of end of game, and you'll probably not have a bunch of 6-7 overtimes that we've seen in the last 5 or 6 years of college football. You'll see a lot more endings, and I think it'll be good, you know, good for guys to get closer to playing in more of the professional rules anyway.
Lucky Lefty is the podcast. Malik Zaire here on Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Tell us about Marcus Freeman, year two. Has he reached out to former players like yourself, kind of bringing that familial aspect back to the program? 9-4 last year after starting 0-2, so a good finish to the season.
Yeah, Marcus Freeman is the guy that is the perfect fit for this generation of football, especially trying to lead a team on a college football level. Marcus Freeman has the personality for it, very welcoming, created with the football office, an alumni weekend for all the players to be able to come back during the spring game and reconnect with the guys past, present, and in the future alumni with the players on the team. So Marcus Freeman is a player's coach in every aspect, but he's got that nuance of being able to be a leader as well that may not be the one tackling and making touchdowns on the field, but is just as infectious as a man Titano was for us, except he's our head coach. So I think it'll bring a lot of bravado. It'll bring a lot of confidence to a team that is, at the end of the day, I mean, we don't have Brian Kelly, and he was a great piece to Notre Dame's history of football for those 10 years being the winning head coach. So not that we're necessarily replacing that, but filling the shoes of somebody that, you know, deserves a lot of credit in that aspect. I think Marcus Freeman is the right fit for it. And year two, he's been through a lot through 1 year, but year two is looking a lot more upside.
And you look at the Notre Dame schedule, three key games on there. You're facing at home against Ohio State. You're at home against USC, at Clemson. You mentioned Sam Hartman earlier, transferring in from Wake Forest. How big of an impact is that to have a sixth-year senior quarterback when you have these massive, massive games on your schedule?
Yeah, that's what we signed him for. We got the three biggest games in college football this year against Ohio State, against Clemson, and you know, against USC and Caleb Williams. So we signed Sam Hartman for these three games, and we're looking to cash in, man. We're all in on Sam Hartman and that, being able to let go of two quarterbacks to other schools that, you know, could have did a great job for us and won some games. But, you know, we had to go out fishing for a bigger fish to handle these three specific games, because I think this can change the tide of not only the program, but it can change the tide for a Notre Dame program that doesn't get a lot of respect in these big games. So we found the answer for it. A lot of teams don't think we can play well in big games. Well, we got a big-time quarterback from what a lot of people believe to fix those and alleviate those issues. So, you know, in terms of fixing the issues, we try to adjust it this offseason. I think we've done it with Sam Hartman. We still got to go out there and do it, but from making the right moves and getting closer to that without having to do all the crazy things you see in college football to get quarterbacks, I think we've done it the right way to give ourselves a chance this year.
Malik, can you tell us about playing Navy? Of course, you were a quarterback, but preparing for a team that runs the triple option can be tricky. Do you think kind of having the offseason leading into week zero helps Notre Dame here?
Yeah, it helps Notre Dame a lot from attention to detail. It's one of those games where they're going to do all the right things. You just have to beat them on that out execution. And for us to be able to have a detailed oriented game like that for the first game, it's going to give us the confidence, and, you know, we're going to be able to work some of the younger guys in getting ready for week four. So this is a great start. It's different than going against, you know, a community college or something like that, week zero, getting to play a team that not only is hard to beat on an in-and-out basis, but for us to have the attention to detail to overcome that and play strong coming out, it's going to help us for week four against Ohio State for sure.
Now, Malik, you played at Notre Dame, you played at Florida, you ran out of a lot of fun tunnels in your time at college. Obviously, running into that Notre Dame stadium, we'll call that number one. What was your favorite road stadium to run into that really got your juices flowing getting ready for a game?
Definitely the Florida State game when they had Jameis Winston and Jalen Ramsey. It was number five coming off a championship. They gave us a small little baby locker room, and, you know, it was like the fans were literally sitting on top of us, and it was just that community feel. I mean, they really gave us a bad locker room for that. And to be so close, it felt like we were like, I think the band had a better locker room than we did going into that game. So running out and then seeing the smoke and it being a huge nighttime game and all the fixings made it, you know, college football worthy.
Malik Zaire, of course, former Notre Dame and Florida quarterback here on Sharp Money. Let's talk quarterbacks. A quarterback that's looking to go back-to-back in the Heisman market, that is Caleb Williams. What do you like about the USC quarterback?
Man, I love Caleb Williams. I got the pleasure to know him before he was end up going to Oklahoma. So, you know, it's awesome to see a kid that you really had a lot of faith in going into it, making a big splash, end up, you know, doing the things that he does. So it's not a surprise to see just the success of what he's doing. I mean, he's definitely the top two quarterback, if not, you know, number one going into this season, and is rightfully so. I mean, he's very dynamic. He's got all the intangibles, you know. So my favorite quarterback, one of in college football. So I think he's going to continue to have a lot of success this year. I mean, you were Lincoln Riley, and he's been printing off success at that position, and you added, you know, a generational talent with that. I mean, you know, he's got a nice run that I think he's looking to continue in the years coming, especially getting Juju Williams.
Now, looking down the road, Georgia, your betting favorite right now to three-peat here as your college football champion. Are you going with Georgia or are you going somewhere else here when you're looking who hoists the trophy at the end of the season?
Man, it's hard not to put Georgia, you know, with all the success that they've had the last two seasons. I mean, the iconic defenses and the players they've been able to produce, I mean, it's really unfair. But, you know, you can't count out Alabama and what Nick Saban has cooking over there. The only thing about the situation this year is that there's no generational quarterbacks over at Georgia or Alabama that, you know, I feel like we could have a good chance of making a run at Notre Dame. If any year to do it, I think this is a good year for us to take a great stab at it just because, you know, quarterbacks win games, and especially the big ones. You see, even C.J. Stroud was competing against Georgia, as iconic as they were, but it just shows you what a dynamic quarterback and a receiver can do. You know, even the best defenses have can give up 40-plus points. So the quarterbacks make the difference. I believe Notre Dame is in the top three for quarterback rooms this year, especially over Ohio State and over Clemson. You know, SC, probably not. We're going to have to really battle that one out. But, you know, I give us Notre Dame a good chance of having a chance of winning the championship this year, provided things go right, because of our quarterback room being, I think, one of the top in the country, and Alabama and Georgia's are still unproven. They still got to find a guy.
Love it, Malik. The podcast, Lucky Lefty Podcast. Enjoyed the conversation, man. Enjoy the game tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you guys.
You could slang it. The Lucky Lefty Podcast. Malik Zaire. You can find him on Twitter at Malik Zaire 8. Next, big time better, Athletic National College Football reporter Ari Wasserman joins us.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Get everything we offer for as low as $19. NFL betting guide, the college football betting guide, daily best bets, 24/7 video stream, power rankings. Of course, the betting splits as well. VSIN.com/subscribe to sign up. It's VSIN.com. VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up. It is Sharp Money. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Mike Somich sitting in today. Great to see Somich. Of course, the big guy, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. We're going to talk to Ari Wasserman, of course, the great Ari Wasserman, the Athletic national college football reporter. You can check out the podcast there. RIP to Wasserman and Staples, by the way. At Ari Wasserman on Twitter, we say, what's up to Ari? Hi, Ari. How are you?
No, that's next segment.
It's next segment.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, boys. Welcome back. I told you. Dustin knows I'm going through this like medical situation. I swear my brain is in a fog. So I literally was just setting Ari up. And I like the fact that you didn't interrupt me as I did like literally a 5-minute intro to Ari.
I thought you were doing an early preview because you're really good at teasing things, right?
Like that was a hell of a tease.
I was like, okay, he's really selling the next guest 15 minutes early. I love it.
My tease went so deep, I said hi.
You got lost in the sauce. It's cool, man. It happens.
Loss in the sauce. By the way, have you had an opportunity to let the Isaiah Simmons trade settle in? As Arizona, and again, Arizona, I'll check the market today. I haven't checked. But that 4.5 is almost laughable as far as the season win total. I think it's akin to what the Bears did last year, Somich. And Dustin, I do want to get your take on Simmons in that Wink Martindale defense with the Giants. It's almost akin to what the Bears were trying to accomplish last year, which is not much. You know, tear it down, cap space heading into the next year, a year one head coach in Eberflus, a year one head coach in Gannon. You see the numbers still 4.5 in the market on the Cardinals. They're getting rid of everybody. There's no expectations this year.
No, there's not. I mean, you have Colt McCoy starting at quarterback as we start the season here. For me, the big question here is Kyler Murray. Can they find someone to take the contract at some point this year? Does he need to play one or two games, look healthy? Can they then ship him out at that point? This is the Bears of last year where it's like, hey, we are just shutting down shop before the season even starts. We do not want to be competitive. We want to go after the number one pick. We want to have draft capital that we can have for the long term, be able to kind of rebuild our roster, open up cap space. It all comes down to Caleb Williams now, Kyler Murray now, and what they decide to do with Kyler Murray once this season starts and how they want to handle that situation, because the Arizona Cardinals are going nowhere fast, and they're not going to do anything next year either or the year after that. So it's really how fast can we rebuild this team, how quickly we can get this thing built up from the ground up, and it's going to be a fire sale for the next year.
I don't think we see Murray this year, big guy.
No. We may never see Kyler Murray as the quarterback of the Cardinals again. I don't know what his future holds, because let's remember, the only reason Kyler Murray was the number one pick in the draft was because a hire was made in Arizona looking for an offensive brand of football. And the only coach in America who believed Kyler Murray was worthy of being the number one pick in the draft was Cliff Kingsbury. There's new regime in there. I don't know if this whole group from the front office down believes in Kyler Murray the way Cliff Kingsbury did. And by the way, Cliff Kingsbury believed in him since he was like 15 years old. He was obsessed with Kyler Murray. There's nothing about Kyler Murray based on his off the field, his on the field, that shows me he is going to remain a starting quarterback. Like, over under how many years for Kyler Murray playing quarterback in the NFL? 2.5?
Oh, that'd be tough. I mean, if you don't watch film, why didn't he just play baseball? Like, seriously, it would have been a much better career for him. He would have been able to play Call of Duty all the time. Just go out there, hit a couple home runs, run well, real so, fast.
But here's the thing. DraftKings has a market. You know, I like to take longer shots. I dare you to make a case for anyone other than fewest wins this year, Cardinals plus 220. I dare you. There just isn't a case close to the Cardinals.
TBD on the quarterback, and the market reacted to the fire sale yesterday. Because yesterday that number went 6.5 to 7 week 1 at Washington. So again, back in May, this number was sitting 5.5 on an opener, all the way up to 7. Sam Howell and the Commanders laying 7 to anybody is fun, to say the least, especially a week 1 vacuum play like this. But we don't know the quarterback. And again, the market reacted yesterday to that fire sale. We go 6.5 to the key number here. Somich is 7.
Survivor play for us?
No, we're not using the Commanders in Survivor. Hard pass.
So wait, hold on. Let's start there. Why don't we discuss why it would be a hard pass?
Because it's Sam Howell. Like, there you know, we don't trust these quarterbacks week 1. Look at last year's results. Look at last year's results. You have Trey Lance, who you're trusting as a survivor pick, just blow up in your face. in that Chicago-San Francisco game. And now you want to go right back to the apple cart and go with Sam Howell the next year as your survivor pick?
When are we ever going to use the Commanders other than then?
Why do we have to use the Commanders?
Because we want to save the good teams for later.
Yeah, you know what? We want to get to week two as well. Like, there is a fine line we're walking here, and walking next to Sam Howell is not part of that fine line in my survivor strategy.
Okay, fair enough. So my assumption is you're not comfortable laying seven with Sam Howell either?
No, I'm going to bet the Cardinals. I'll bet him at seven, but I'm not going to wait. I'm not going to bet him at seven right now. Because I'm going to get 7.5 or 8 by the time this thing kicks off. So why not just hang out and wait around and get a 7.5 number? By the way, lowest total the week one, 38.5 too, catching over a touchdown in a game where they're projecting 5.5 touchdowns scored. That looks pretty good. I think this Washington defense could be very good. I don't trust that Sam Howell can move the football. That is a huge issue for me, especially when you're looking at as many as 7 points, especially when you're looking at survivor. Let me ask you guys this. Let's say it's 17-13 in the fourth quarter and Sam Howell's got the rock with 5 minutes left. How you feeling?
Are we up or down?
We're down.
The reports are tremendous out of camp on Howell, and he's looked good in the pre, but I do see where you're going with that.
Every Kentucky Derby horse trains well too, Patrick.
Fair enough. You're the guy telling me Jordan Love looks great in the preseason. Sam Howell looked pretty great in the preseason too.
Hey, Sam Howell hasn't looked bad in the preseason. But I just don't think Sam Howell's very good. The difference is I think Jordan Love is good. I have snaps that I've seen him play in regular season NFL games. I thought he was good in Nevada. He got to sit for 4 years, and he got a contract before he took a full start in the NFL. The team believed in him. They wanted to start him 2 years ago over Aaron Rodgers. So the team actually believes in him. And, oh, by the way, that team has been pretty good at picking quarterbacks, whereas Ron Rivera in Washington, not exactly great at that.
If Howell is anything, and I mean anything, that could potentially be a top five defense. We know it. The skill is crazy. McLaurin, now, the one concern you'd have for the Commanders is that turf toe couldn't linger.
Yep.
But Jahan Dotson is ready to become one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. I completely believe that. Robinson and Gibson, 1-2 punch. The question mark for the Commanders, which lends itself to your theory, supporting or taking a shot against Sam Howell, is the offensive line may be the weakness on this Commanders team, Samich.
Yeah, they can't block well, and Sam Howell is mobile, so he should be able to run around back there. I like the weapons on the outside, but if you have a quarterback who I don't believe is a great decision maker and doesn't have a ton of time, that is a recipe for disaster. And the defense can be as great as it wants, but if the offense is turning the football over on your side of the field, it's tough to not give up some points. To me, this is just a team where, look, I would rather be wrong about Sam Howell, him be phenomenal, and then we use Washington in week 5 or week 6, than I would be being dead on right about Sam Howell and them losing this game and being knocked out of Survivor.
A little wait and see approach with the Commanders. Big guy, I was right there with you. Now, my assumption is there's a lot of people that are going to use Washington in week 1 of Survivor. So let's put them on the spot. Samich, if we're bailing on the Commanders, is there a team you're looking at right now that maybe we can discuss for week 1? The three of us are entering Circa Survivor.
I'm going to play the mentalist, Patrick. I'm going to text you the team he's going to say because I think everyone's going to be on
let's play.
Well, I'll be the mentalist right now. Just texted you the team I think he's going
to
say.
Okay, well, I have not actually looked through and decided who I want to play week 1 yet. So let me take a look at week 1. But let me say this. Some rules for Survivor.
Home teams.
We're taking home teams. Out of division. No young quarterbacks week 1, 2, or 3. We need to actually understand.
He has a lot of rules, Patrick. I did not agree to all of these rules.
But I send you an email right afterward with a complete schedule and strategy, and you think I don't have rules?
He's got a lot of rules, man. He's like, whatever the gremlins are before they become gremlins, that's Mike Samich in Survivor.
Unbelievable.
Okay, but everything you just said equals the formula to Dustin's team. Should we say it? Would you like to say it?
Now, no, I want him to get to it on his own. He's going to say this team. I guarantee it. Because when they do the count, Circa's going to have 70% of the tickets on this team in Survivor.
We're not taking the Ravens. Let's get out of the thing. There are better spots to take the Ravens. I appreciate the Ravens pick,
just
though.
So everybody knows, I'm holding up my phone because the big guy, mentalist style, did text me the Ravens as the play in week 1.
Yeah, give me the Vikings. The Vikings, not a team I probably want to use down the line. Week 1, they're at home against the Buccaneers, so out of division game against a defense or an offense that I don't like. Mayfield, quarterback for the Bucs, happy to see him try and take on this defense. I think the Vikings are the best week 1 play.
Nobody's a bigger Kirk Cousins guy than me and his father, but for millions of dollars on the line week one, we're going to back Kirk Cousins?
It's not prime time, big guy.
Baker off an airplane last year, SoFi came in and beat the Raiders. Scares me a little bit. So we're bailing on the Commanders. Maybe we zone in on the Vikings. Tremendous. I promise Ari Wasserman is next.